Are you a founder, co-founder, aspiring entrepreneur, or just someone who loves to hear about how companies are built? Then join us as we talk with founders and CEOs who have been there and done that. Welcome to the Founders Formula Podcast, sponsored by Hatchet Ventures. And now, your host, Chet Lovgren.
All right. Hello. Welcome one and welcome all. It's that time again. The Founders Formula Podcast, the show that's designed to bring you the latest and greatest insights from founders and CEOs worldwide who have been there and done that. Sponsored by Hatchet Ventures. I'm your host, Chet Lovgren, and I'm thrilled for our guest today. He is has had a successful IPO and exit at a company named Next Biometrics. He's got a PhD as well as several patents and publications. Got a great story. Welcome the CEO and co-founder of Jibe, Matthias Trocoli. Matthias, how are we doing?
I'm doing great, Chad. It's great to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me to join.
Yeah, we're really thrilled to have you. I think me personally, as someone who now we're in, I believe, episode 21 of the podcast.
Oh, wow.
It's been a pretty good run so far.
It's a big number.
Yeah. Well, you know, most 90% of podcasts don't make it past episode 25. And then 80% of those podcasts that do make it past their 25th episode don't make it past their 30th episode. So once we hit 30, I'm gonna pop the champagne because that's kind of like a milestone.
There you
go. We're close to 25. We've got our guests slated and our podcast recording scheduled out to 25. So we'll at least make it to 25. Let's see if we can go to 30. But for me as a podcast host and someone who's been talking to a lot of founders, I find your background incredibly interesting. We don't typically have the pleasure of, number one, having someone from a technical background, but also having someone with the level of experience in their technical background from what you've accomplished and the tenure that you've had. One company for over a decade. So I'm really excited to dig in your background. Of course, talk about what Jibe does, and then we'll dig into some other things about you, your co-founder, and raising capital. But I want to turn it over to you. Give me the story. Tell me about Matthias and how you got to where you are today, and then we'll jump into the story about Jibe.
Yeah, sounds great. Where do I start? Let's see. Well, came to the U.S., when I was 17 or 18, so it's been a while since I've been here. This is really home to me. Started in the East Coast. I went to school just outside Philadelphia and started getting my electrical engineering degree, and then stayed on all the way through my PhD. And it was really fun to get to know this country in the East Coast, because there's a lot of cultures meshed together over there very, very tightly, for sure. And that's actually where my entrepreneurial story began, also at PhD school, because we got approached by these folks from Europe. Actually, they had some IP and some technology that they needed some help to develop. And, you know, we took that as part of my PhD project, and we spent a couple of years developing some of that core IP. It was regarding biometrics, and basically became my PhD thesis, and I built some pilots for them, some prototypes. And when I graduated, I basically became their first employee. So it was the two CEO and the other founder, and then I was their first full-time employee. Not long after that, I became their CTO. And then it was the three of us trying to figure out what to do next. And then we were talking quite a bit with companies in the West Coast and also companies in Asia. That's where a lot of this technology is actually produced these days. So decided to move to Seattle, and slowly started building the team here in the area. The original CEO and founder were still in Norway. So basically I was all alone building this engineering and development team. It almost felt like I was running much of the company on my own here. So it was really a really good learning experience. And one day we decided to participate in this bid for Dell Computers. You know, and at the time, I think I only had like 10 or 12 people in the team. So and there I was trying to submit a bid for Dell. And at the time, fingerprinting was kind of getting hot. I think it was right around the time, or just before or just after, don't remember, when Apple launched fingerprint sensors on their phone. So it was a pretty hot topic. anyway, so we participated, and I don't know where we won that bid. Again, 12 people in my team, never had mass produced anything, very little software background. And when you work with someone like Dell, it's not just their, you know, team in Austin, it's also all their, you know, support infrastructure in Asia and the rest of the world. I mean, they're massive companies that build their stuff, right? Long story short, crazy 18 months. It was one of those things that either makes you or breaks you as a company. And, you know, almost died a couple of times trying to build that product, trying to scale that. And so hard to do. And we pulled it off. Don't know how, a lot of help from a lot of really great people, both here as well as overseas. And I would say like 24 months later, I was supporting close to 2 million units per year globally had my product. So if you bought enterprise Dell laptops back then, we were part of their biometric stack. And it was a great experience. It was we learned a lot. It was very tough. But again, it's one of those things that, that, like I said, it either makes you or breaks you. We managed to pull it off, and we ended up actually doing IPO. This is back in Europe where the original founders were from. I stayed on with them for a couple more years, doing a few things here and there, and then finally decided to take a break. And then not long after that, started working with my friend Patrick. So that's the short story of how we got here.
That's incredible. So first job out of college, you're a CTO. Like, how old were you? Like, that's impressive, man. Like, if oh man, yeah. that's really impressive stuff. How old were you? And you said you were working on part of this product as part of your thesis, right? So were you hired before you started doing this?
That's a great question. So I started pretty young because I was in the fast track also for my PhD. So I graduated when I got my PhD at 25, 26, somewhere around there. I remember, maybe 26. And so I had already done some prototypes for them by the time I actually presented my PhD dissertation, which part of it was this product. I was 26, 27, stayed on in East Coast doing a little bit more research out of their labs for them, out of the university labs, right? Because we were still leveraging that infrastructure. And then, and then I think I was about close to 30 when we decided to move to Seattle and start building the team. And it's funny, when I started hiring people, I didn't know where to go. I didn't know where to start. I was all alone too. So I did the first thing that felt comfortable to me and started recruiting engineers right out of college, because those were the people that I was used to dealing with. And it was right out of the recession, the last big recession too. So it was like 2010 or something. So really when the things were bad. And so it was not that hard to recruit people too. So that's a good thing, I guess. We started slowly putting together more and more engineers, and most of them all, like I said, around my age, because those were the people I was used to dealing with, and I liked training them and telling them how the sensor works and how the technology works, and slowly we reached critical mass, and then one thing led to another, and you just finally decided you have a team. So it was a great experience for sure.
So let's jump into that real quick before we talk a little bit about Jibe. So what is the culture like of 30-year-old Matthias CTO hired a bunch of young guns out of college to build this incredible product? What's maybe one of your founders' formulas to building that winning team that you kind of, you know, led you to the success? Because an IPO is no small feat. So obviously you all were doing something incredible over there. And like you said, you know, it was 12 people. It was a fairly small team for what the task was in terms of these, you know, millions, if not billions of units that were going out. What does that look like in terms of a winning culture and how to get people bought in?
Yeah. So it was 12 people at the time we started the process. By the time we were carrying high volume, I think we were close to 50 here in Seattle, and we had a whole support infrastructure in Asia, definitely. So we had manufacturing facilities there and a whole operations team that took care of a lot of things over there. We had also a small software team in Europe. So by that time, you know, we were a real business. But yeah, it started with a few folks here. It was a very naive group at the beginning, starting with myself. I mean, we didn't know what we were doing. We were just a bunch of people developing technology, which, you know, now that I'm trying to do it all over again, I think back at the day when we were doing this and how valuable that was, that we kind of had like, you know, a bubble of just developers that just wanted to make the product work. And sometimes that's what it takes to actually really get to really succeed. So yes, it was mostly learning in the job, learning about the technologies as we came along. We didn't know anything about industrial processes. We didn't know anything about business processes either. It was just trying to get the product to work. And I think that's kind of the startup spirit that leads you to succeed. Because if you really knew, if we really knew what it took to make this work, both business as well as operationally, as well as, you know, technically, you probably won't do it. It's just so much work and so hard that if you really knew what it took to do it, we probably would have just hired somebody else to do it or something. It's so tough. So you kind of have to go at it a little bit with this being almost delusional about this vision that you have and trying to do everything that it takes to succeed. So maybe that's part of the recipe there, that just keep going after your vision and trying to make it work regardless of the obstacles, right? Yeah.
That's brilliant. Yeah, it's some delusional optimism. That's what it takes.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe that's a better word for it, for sure. Yeah.
I think that's I try to stay away from that because that seems to become the new LinkedIn headline buzzword now that people are putting in their profile, delusional optimist. But it is.
Oh no!
It
wait, really? I didn't know that. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's
I
like
totally
the.
Didn't mean to.
No. It's no. I'm saying, I'm framing it that way. It's like we got to do more with less. It's like, okay, we've been hearing that for 6 months. We get it, right? But it does. Like you have to. You're totally right. You know, you have to think outside yourself. I mean, with what I do professionally full time, I'm a solopreneur, and you know, I come from a world where I was a sales leader. So I had people finding leads, reaching out to those leads, setting appointments, doing calls. Like I had people doing all that. I'm really doing that myself now, you know? So even taking it back to getting back in the trenches and doing prospecting and even cold calling and doing some cold outreach and figuring out the best outreach strategy for my top of funnel sales process. Like it's, you know, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of hats, and you got to kind of walk into the day going, not only can I do this department's job, but I can do this department's job and this department's job. And if I really understood what it took to get this thing off the ground, I probably would have been a smarter man and just looked for another job. You know what I mean? Instead of deciding to go out on my own. But there's a thrill behind it as well. And I'm sure you feel that
for
too.
Sure.
There's a thrill behind it.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about
Jibe. What do you all do? What's the problem you're solving for? Who are you solving it for? And how did you come across this problem? And then we'll also dig into, you know, how you and Patrick met each other and then kind of the synergy of you as co-founders. But let's highlight the company a little bit. Tell me a little bit about Jibe.
Yeah, we've been, you know, playing around with some things for the last couple of years. You know, I already did this once, so didn't really have need to jump straight into something right away. And we took our time to figure out really what we wanted to do. But we're now starting to put out a little bit more information. Maybe by the time this is out, there'll be a little bit more out about Jibe. But there's this market actually out there that is very, very untapped. If you think about it, I was reading the other day an article, something like 80% of the global workforce is either a frontline worker or doesn't sit at a desk. 80%. And the funny thing about that number is that the source where I got it from was an article someone referred me to. It was an article that Microsoft wrote. Now, think about Microsoft, company that basically has been helping us office workers for like 25 years. Microsoft Office, probably the most successful software of all time or something, right? And why did they put out this article? It's because basically a $1 trillion company for 25 years, one of the biggest companies in the world, they've basically been going after 20% of the addressable users. What about the other 80%? So it's a huge, huge market that that doesn't have all the digital tools that you and I have to go about our day to day our day to day task. If you think about frontline workers, people in manufacturing, people in supply chain, healthcare, logistics, you name it. Most of them, or a large number of them around the world, they're just using, you know, paper clipboards or two-way radios, or you know, hospitals still use pagers. And the hardware obviously is not just the only problem. Getting that software to them, securing the infrastructure for them, and then conceptualizing the services that they need, all of that is an area that is really underserved. And that's the market that Jive is going after. We're actually been working for the last couple of years building a platform that, that helps them get what I call cloud goodness for all these workers at the front line. And sometimes all they need is you know, simple checklist, or maybe a critical alert, or some critical control, or some security notification, or some safety notice or something. Those very little snippets of cloud goodness is what Jive is all about. We're trying to conceptualize all that for them, and then building a platform all the way from the ground up to actually deliver the goodness to them. So you'll be seeing a little bit more of about us in the next next few weeks. Yeah, we're really excited about what we're building, for sure.
And that's really cool. I think we were talking a little bit before the show. I had worked in supply chain for a couple of years, and I was telling you, yeah, I've been to warehouses, and everybody's just walking around with these big booklets of sometimes of these like the top loaded bound spiral notebooks, and they're just flipping things through. And yeah. I literally seen a budget person. I don't think they were classified as a CFO. I don't think that's the term they use at a mom and pop warehouse, but they were the accountant on staff, and they're walking through literally with like some ledger you'd think you'd see someone from like the 1800s using at like an old good store, the adoption of like even just tablets, you know. And you were talking a little bit about how expensive and how much maintenance and the software costs of tablets.
It's a real big problem, because what all of them have in common is they're not at a desk. So things that you and I take for granted, like a PC or even our phones, they're not in reach. So you need to come up with a solution that is very comprehensive, all the way from the front end all the way to the back end, and it becomes a really deep tech problem. That's kind of the reason why we've been, you know, fooling around with things for a couple of years. But you need to come up with that comprehensive solution, and needs to be built from the ground up to deliver those snippets of information that they need, and that's what we're building at Jive.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I might have missed it. I don't think I did, but like, I think you were talking about the article from Microsoft, which kind of piqued your interest, but that wasn't how you figured out about this problem, right? That was just an article that you were referencing. How did you uncover this problem? Like, how did you get wind of this and find this passion for solving this problem? What was kind of the compelling event, or the triggering event that led you down this path?
Yeah, so it all started back basically coming out of my last venture. I got exposed to a lot of people needing access to a lot of tools and not having the way to actually deliver or really, you know, rendering all those tools. We were building for Dell access control platforms, but that was just the beginning of the whole chain, right? Once you get through a system or into a system, what happens next? That's how I started thinking about, okay, the solution needs to be a little bit more comprehensive, and it cannot just be a collection of one or two pieces. Slowly, as I was taking a little bit of a break, hiking quite a bit here in the Pacific Northwest, started thinking about what could be the solution. And that's when I also started talking quite a bit with my co-founder, Patrick, who in the past had done quite a bit of work in the IoT space, and had built solutions for people to connect to cloud services in an efficient and secure way. So between the two of us, we started to brainstorm What does it really take to make this happen? And we decided let's just rebuild the stack specifically just for this purpose. So that's kind of how it all came about.
That's really cool. Let's dig into that relationship. So I was telling you a little bit before the show, I thought it was kind of funny because you spent 12 years, had a successful IPO and a successful exit as a CTO, but your co-founder is actually the CTO. You decided to take the reins as CEO. So let's talk a little bit about how you and Patrick met and kind of the synergy between you two. And then let's also dig into that. What made you want to learn the other side of the business, learn a new side of it and venture in as the CEO?
So actually, I met Patrick in my previous life. I contracted him for some work. He helped me out with a couple of things. And then I saw some clippings later on of some other work that he had done for some other companies, and which was very relevant to some of the things that I also wanted to do. So, you know, over many lunches and over many coffees, we decided to give it a shot. So I actually knew him for a little bit of time before Jive. But yeah, that's a funny question. I'm not the type of person who likes to do the same thing twice. So maybe that's part of the reason why this time around, you know, wanted to try being the CEO. But personally, I'm also more of the visionary type person. I like to just think about a vision and say, okay, what does the world really need? And what can I offer to solve a problem? And what does the world look like when you know, I put my two cents on things, and I figured that okay, maybe as a CEO I can start shaping a company that actually follows whichever vision that we have as a team of founders. So again, a little bit of me not wanting to do things the same thing twice, but also a little bit about the way I am. I think. As a CTO, you have to really kind of wear blinders and focus on building the product sometimes more so than anything else. And but as a CEO, you kind of have to sell this vision. So I wanted to try giving that a try, yeah, for sure.
What is so there are a lot of things you're probably doing as a CEO that you didn't do as a CTO. At Next Biometrics, there's probably a lot of things that you were doing at Next Biometrics that overlap because you're a founder, but I'd love to hear from you. What is the thing you've had to do as a CEO that you didn't have to do in your past life that you're actually surprised how much you enjoy doing it?
Oh, that last piece is a key
piece. Yeah, exactly.
It's no, for sure. It's different. You know, one thing that is completely different that I really enjoy between being a CEO and being a CTO is how much more outside of the company you have to work with as a CEO. So basically, the majority of my relationships, not just because we're a small team, but because I have to interact with others, you know, potential partners, potential customers, funding sources, advisors, etc. All of these people. And none of them work for me. None of them are in technically in part of my team. So that's an aspect that I really wasn't quite, you know, I didn't quite digest back when I was a CTO, because my entire team was my entire team. And that's who those were the people I dealt with. Yeah, but now the majority of the people you would deal with are outside of your company, especially as you're building the startup, right? Maybe when we hit critical mass, that changes a little bit or balances out. But for sure, that's one aspect that I was totally surprised by and really fascinated. And it's really one of the great parts of being a CEO, for sure.
Yeah, I like asking that question, especially when somebody is doing something more go-to-market related, where there is probably like some aspect of partnership and sales and even like talking to investors that maybe they haven't experienced in the past.
Yeah,
as a first-time founder, because I think there's what do they always say? There's beauty in like those little things.
Yeah,
you know, we had Michael Abel, co-founder of Singularity, on here, and he said one of the things he enjoys, you know, he grew up in the sales world, so you know, AE, senior AE, and then a sales leader, and he said, you know, for me, one of the things that I really enjoyed was building prototypes in Figma for product features and the UI and the UX design. I didn't think I'd enjoy that, but it was kind of nice to be able to. you know, work in the early days with those building blocks. And so I always find like there are these little tiny things, even for me, it's like, oddly enough, being the CFO of my own business is actually kind of oddly satisfying somehow. Like I love numbers and spreadsheets. I've always used a lot of data. And so it helps me like look at like cost control and acquisition costs and how to lower those and get me to think strategically with what I'm doing. And I think that's really interesting. I was telling my dad that, and he's like, so you like being an accountant, basically. I was like, I know it sounds really weird, but I've always had a thing for data. So I love hearing that from people, you know, what they thought was, you know, they didn't know they would like what they really do like. So that's
it's
awesome. Let's talk a little bit about capital. So I know you've kind of been operating in the shadows a little bit. You're releasing a lot more information, a lot more things are coming out with the product. But what has your experience been raising capital at this point? I know we were talking a little bit before the show, and you have this kind of interesting way of raising some capital initially that we can talk about, but fill everybody in, especially having had a successful IPO and an exit. We know you're no stranger to like what needs to be done, not only from a product side, but just from an investor side. But let's talk a little bit about your experience raising capital and what you've experienced at Jibe so far as a co-founder.
Yeah, sure. So we did things a little bit in an unusual way, in part because the problem that we're trying to solve really requires a structural change from the bottom up, re-engineering things just to fit this need. So I had to go out there and start selling this idea, this vision to people that really understood technically what this meant. So I had to actually put a lot of mileage air miles, listening folks and explaining, hey, listen, this is the problem, and this is what needs to happen. And most of them were people that really understood the technology or understood security concerns or understood cloud infrastructure, understood hardware, understood software services, understood everything that was part of that value stack or the value chain for delivering critical cloud services. So starting from there, that's where I started basically getting angels to commit and say, hey, listen, we believe what you're building. And one by one, not only was I actually putting together a little bit of nice little pocket change for building a few things and playing around, but also I was building the credibility on the idea. So when you start getting these folks that actually know what they're doing to actually start putting some money to work, then all of a sudden starts getting a little bit more credible, and it's not just about the value of the cash they put in, but it's also about their support for sure. So we went a little bit different route in that sense. We got quite a few industry executives and quite a few people that they're really superstars in what they do to come in and help us out early. And at the same time, you know, this is a problem that needs a lot of deep tech work, and we needed our time to build things. So we weren't quite ready, 2 years ago to go after a fund and start asking for $3 million or anything like that, right? So we needed to actually start from the bottom up. So we think we have something now that is getting to where we want it to be. So that's going to change a little bit, and we're going to go more to the traditional ways of, going after the venture world for sure.
That's awesome. It's going to be great to see. And I love that idea of, it feels like you were almost building your MVP while you were also raising capital with like what you're saying, like, hey, we had people that understood the technicality of this and the need for this. So the fact that they were raising money also gave us that confidence that we were on the right track, you know?
For sure. It's a little bit different for deep tech, right? So sometimes when we're building software products, these days it's so easy to build prototypes for software, and you can actually start getting customers to use it very easily, right? So one of the first metrics investors have is, you know, what are your users or what kind of revenue you have. And when you're building deep tech, it's a little bit different. You actually need to build a portfolio of people that are behind you, what you're trying to build. And you need to buy yourself a little bit of extra time to actually get that technology to make sense. For sure, it's slightly different than the standard SaaS company.
Yeah. Well, Matthias, we're almost out of time here, but I would love to close the show with just getting What's your founder's formula for founders, or what's a piece of advice that you would leave with them as they go on their own journey, or as they're already on their journey, but experiencing the ups and downs, the ebbs and flows, you should say, of being a founder? What would Matthias's wisdom be?
Matthias, wisdom. I don't know. That's too strong. here's what has helped me through the last few years as I've been building this, and also going back to my first thing at it, be willing to fail. Sometimes it's a lot stronger drive. It's a lot stronger, much more powerful than actually wanting to succeed. And for many of us, that refusal to just fail is what actually gets us to succeed. I know it's a little bit of a twisted way of describing things, but I even heard it from people in sports that what made them want to win is that just I didn't want to lose. Right, the feeling of losing is horrible. So, I think that's one of the most underrated sources of energy for us. Which is willing to try everything that it takes to make that. What was it that we called it earlier? Delusional positivity or whatever. to actually get that to reality. You just don't want to fail. So that's for sure one of those things that if you're an early founder or first time founder, just don't give up. Just keep at it.
Yeah, there's always lessons to be learned in failure, but failure for the sake of failure is madness. So I love that, because if you look at it from you're most likely you are going to fail in certain things, and it happens, and you can learn from it. But if you have that mindset or that drive of like, I think it's Moneyball, one of my favorite movies. In one of the montages, he's motivating the team, Brad Pitt's character, yeah. Billy Bean, and he says, "I hate losing. I hate losing more than I want to win." It's like that always stuck
it's
with
so
me
true. It's, yeah, a lot. Yeah. Of, yeah, a lot of people in sports say that, and I think what you're really doing is when you're quote unquote failing temporarily, is you're just figuring out ways not to succeed, and you just keep trying until you actually figure out the way to succeed. So don't call it failure; just call it figuring out ways not to succeed, and eventually you'll find the right one. So for sure.
That's awesome. Matthias, this has been a great episode. If people want to connect with you or learn more about Jibe, how do they do that?
Yeah, Matthias at jibe.cloud. So very easy. G-Y-B-E. Love to talk to you guys if you have suggestions, feedback, and just want to chat about startups for sure.
I love it. Thank you, Matthias, for your time today. To all of our listeners of the Founders Formula podcast, if you're interested in engaging with us or Hatchet Ventures, our sponsor, any further, we will have links to our website, our LinkedIn pages, and everything in the episode description below, as well as a link to Jibe and Matthias's LinkedIn. And you can interact and engage with all of us there. Thank you for listening. We're live every Tuesday as early as 6 a.m. Eastern with a brand new episode, and we look forward to seeing everybody next week. Thank you, Matthias.
Thank you so much. This was a blast.
Likewise.